there is a very awkward stage that you have to kind of endure and go through, because at the beginning, it's like, oh, you guys are doing a cute podcast, or why are you putting time into that? When the main thing is this, and why even put time into that? Because if anything, you're just going to hurt yourself by being that outspoken. So there's like a very pivotal time that you got to go through. That's very like, that gives you a lot of anxiety, that really questions and doubts everything that you're doing. But obviously now it's paid off and everybody sees it as this thing now. But man, you know, like, it's a weird slippery slope that you're either going to endure or, you know, be like, all right, this isn't worth it. Like, let me get back. All these people are right. Like, what am I doing?
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood, where we will prepare you to make your what's next in life your best yet. Our next guest is Will Compton. Will is a 9-year NFL veteran linebacker, having played for Washington, the Titans, the Saints, and the Raiders. Will co-hosts the Bussin' with the Boys podcast with Taylor Lewan, which is one of my favorite podcasts out there, and go check out my recent guest appearance if you haven't done so. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you tune in weekly. Thanks and enjoy. Comp, welcome to the show, brother.
Dude, thanks for having me. I know last time the podcast guys have not been wanting us to pod on your pod. Thankfully, you've been on the bus. Everybody can check that one out. That's a banger podcast. But I'm glad we're doing it now, because now we're boys. Like, you've been on the bus, you're one of the boys. I think this conversation is just going to be a lot more fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'll say this, and I say this as a compliment, but like, I was always a fan of your podcast, but I didn't realize how big it truly was. Like, I went on the Ed Milet show maybe a year ago, and I assumed that would be like the biggest response, text messages, like, holy crap, like the Ed Milet show. Cause to me, that's like the pinnacle. It's like the number one business podcast out there. Not sure what I was doing on there. Well, I go on the bus and literally every single day, someone in public, I get a text like, dude, you were on with the boys. I love those dudes. And like, I'm in Louisville, Kentucky and Buffalo and all that. Like, these people aren't even local to Nashville. It's amazing what y'all have built, but I'm going to get into all that. We're going to dig in on your story a little bit, but you've been busy this summer. And first I got to ask. So there's a ton of Bills fans that'll be listening into this podcast. Not all Bills fans, but a ton of them. What was Josh Allen doing at tight end U, George Kittle's event, and all the tight ends event down in Nashville?
Dude, so Josh was like a last minute, he's like a last minute play on the bus. I was talking with George, like, hey, do you want to come on this week and promote tight end? We'll drop it on Thursday when you guys do your camp. If you want to bring on another tight end like Rob Tonyan, Hockenson, Travis Kelce, like those boys, I know them, they've been on before. I'm like, if they all want to come, if somebody wants to come on, you guys want to promote tight end, you're more than welcome to. And literally 20 minutes before he comes on, he hits me up. He's like, hey, Josh Allen's going to join me. And internally I'm hype, but I'm trying to play it cool. I was like, you talking the DN from Jacksonville? just to hear him say no, Josh Allen from Buffalo. And I was like, dude, that's awesome. He goes, you owe me big time. And I was like, yes I do. Josh comes on, and he was, number one, Josh is a stud, like the nicest dude. Like, his humility and his listening to his story and his upbringing with his parents. He speaks on his dad a little bit about how he was raised, because I was asking about his mental side on sending all the emails to all the scouts, whether it be in college, the NFL, and if he ever wavered on doubting himself because he was always kind of told no, even though he was a 6'5" coming out of California. And he just had a lot of good stuff to say, but an awesome dude. He was also, he went out the night before in Nashville, because he came to Nashville, and you know how it is when you come to Nashville, you got to go out and you got to experience Nashville.
Right.
He was kind of telling me before, because he was like a little stuffy. He was like messing with the shirt. He's like, man, I had several old fashions last night, and I'm hurting this morning. But he came in because he had to pause in the middle of the podcast to go. He's like, hey, I got to go take a minute. He like leaves the bus to go out, step out. We don't know what he did. George and I continued the pod. But dude, he was awesome, man. He just came to throw. Like, George was looking for quarterbacks to come throw a tight end. I feel like it's just like an open invite for like quarterbacks, because they always need guys that are throwing. And Josh came in the next day. He was wearing like the boy's head, came up. He's like, comp, check it out. I'm just thinking like, bro, you're a stud. You're a stud, and you're hyping me up about wearing our hat. But just a super good dude. Like, really goes in with the story that you told on the bus about him and your kid's birthday party. But just an awesome guy, man. And he's young. So it's like, I keep that in mind. I'm like, oh, he's probably looking at coming on the bus. Like, it's cool because we're older, but we're looking at him like, dude, you're Josh Allen.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I don't think he understands how big of a superstar he truly is now. And that some of that comes from being, you know, not having an offer out of high school, having to go the JUCO route, and then having one offer out of there. I think like all of that impacts him. But I asked Ryan Fitzpatrick, and we talked about this on the bus, like, what impresses you most about Josh Allen? And he's like, just his humility, like that he doesn't realize how good he truly is. And then he's willing to just come down and throw and be one of the boys down in Nashville. Like, that is so cool. And that's what makes Josh so incredibly, so incredibly special. And
did you hear the story about why he didn't leave a year early?
Yes, because he loved his college coach and all that.
Yes, he had told his agency, because him and Taylor, they're both with CAA, but he had told his agency that, yes, he's leaving. Like, he's leaving early, he's doing it, and sitting there the night before, and his coach was calling him, and he couldn't answer the phone, and because he felt so bad, slept on it, was like, I can't tell my coach that I'm leaving, so I'm just going to stay another year.
Right. Yeah, that's completely wild. I also got to ask one other thing. Kittle Fest, George Kittle's been at his house. That looked like a banger last weekend.
You got to come next year. George is one of the best human beings. Like, I was at Kittle Fest, and just to give perspective, like, I met Xbox team group chat that he has, like an Xbox team where they just play Halo. He's never met him in person. They came to the party. I also met an Instagram group chat that he's on because they just send him memes and they would just ask him stuff about ball and George would just respond and they all built a relationship. They're from New York and they flew and George was like, hey, you guys should come to Kittle Fest. So George has like his Xbox Live team there that he had met. He also has an Instagram group chat, which was the first time they had met. George was like, I want to meet your fiance before you get married in October. And obviously, like, George is somebody who he puts on tight end you, which is a hard thing to do. You know, I know O-line, there's an O-line masterminds, like, for position groups to get together in the way tight end you is put together with like gift suites and a nice hotel and how structured it is. They talk a lot about like mentality and like growing together, and everybody's very humble, like walking around all the tight ends, like just being able to do that for George, and obviously how engaging he is, telling everybody happy birthday on Twitter and social media. Like, he's unique because you know these guys that make tons of money and they're the best of their craft. He's right. Arguably the best tight end in the game. And it's not that there's an ego about all these guys, but there's just the same thing with George. There's like a humility and like a perspective he carries with him that he understands his position he's in. He understands his impact, and he understands, like, I'm going to be the same dude all the time. If I love playing Xbox, those are my boys. Like, being in that group chat on Instagram, I was talking with those guys because they were like, hey, is playoff really going to come to the Jets? And I was like, dude, the Jets suck. Like, no. And we're like laughing back and forth. And he goes, dude, you were in the group chat too, but you left. And me, I'm looking at Instagram. Sometimes I'm in these chats and I just leave because I'm like, man, I keep getting these memes. Like, I'll just get out. And that's one that George stayed in and responded to. And he's like, these guys are at Kittle Fest. But at Kittle Fest, it was an insane party, dude. Like, it's just a great time. His dad, they got the side-by-sides driving people from the parking lot to the party, taking care of anybody. They have RVs on site in case, you know, you drink too much. They don't want anybody to drive. So in case you don't have a ride, he lives on like 75 acres. He's got this awesome barn that he works out in. It's just a family affair, bro. Like, family on both sides. Everybody's partying. Anybody can, you know, it is an invite thing, but it's like one of those things where, like, he's open to you bringing people. So you got to come next year is what I'm saying. Right.
Yeah, I'm coming as one of your plus ones next year. Yes. I'm 100% in. I got to get that on the calendar. You talked about them messing with you about playing for the Jets. What's your kind of mindset on playing ball this year?
So maybe this could be the first time I'm saying this kind of stuff like on a podcast, because I haven't, like, I speak on it a little bit on my pod, but my mindset going into this year is, I've played 9 years, dude, and I am super grateful at the opportunity that I've gotten to play in the NFL. I'm still available, and it's one of those things where the last 3 years I've dabbled with one foot in the door, one foot out the door. And these last couple years with the Titans, because I played the full season with the Titans, the mindset going into each year is always trying to avoid finessing training camp. And the reason that I say that isn't because, like, I'm not about that life and I don't love ball. The mindset is knowing that the awareness that I have that I am a veteran who's going to be on a minimum contract that doesn't get a signing bonus. And I would rather be on the team right before the season or be somebody that they bring in the middle of the year, like as a mercenary. I love calling myself a mercenary, like fly me in when the job needs to be done. But it's like one of those things where I don't want to be on a 90-man roster and have to grind to make a 53. And the ego part of me is like, I put together a good enough resume to show that. And I've proven that I can play at the drop of a hat.
Right.
And also just the wear and tear on my body. Like at the end of the day, my pedigree, I wasn't a high round draft pick. Like I'm an undrafted white dude that's 32 years old and I've played 9 years and I have shorter arms and I got to throw my head in offensive linemen because I have my absence of length. And so I just, you know, you want to protect your body as much as you can as you get older. And on top of that, the traction and stuff that I have now and my pivot and my transition with Busting with the Boys, it's allowed me that freedom to kind of pick and choose if I, you know, want to go play ball or not. Cause there's been opportunities at times where I get, like last year, for instance, the Panthers wanted to fly me in with the intention to sign me on day one of training camp. And for me, it was like, I don't want to do that because it's day one of training camp and it is hot as shit outside. And there's a lot of plans that I have for Busting with the Boys that year. So going into this year, it's the same mindset. Like year 10 is alive and well, but you're more like you get older and you realize like I'm on my back nine. So the idea of me playing now is more of an appreciation of thinking of my younger self that's proud of the career I put together. And I want to do that young 10-year-old right. That's so excited that I've gotten to play for so long. Also keeping in mind that it's something that I don't have to do. It's more so I'm doing it for the love out of it and everything else, but it's not something financially that you necessarily have to do. And I'm not saying Busting makes all that kind of money, but I found a passion now in Busting with the Boys that it's like, I feel like that's what guys struggle with when they get out of it is the transition and finding that new high, that roller coaster that we talked about on Busting with the Boys. And I feel like that passion is there with the podcasting world and with kind of the personality stuff that I'm going to be transitioning into.
Yeah. And I love how much thought you put into that, like understanding like, hey, if I go to training camp, I'm going to play a certain type of way. Will Compton is not going to walk around on a football field and not play your brand of ball. Your brand of ball is physical. You're a physical linebacker. So when you put your head into a lineman's chest, like that's wear and tear. And you're right. Yeah. You know, that mercenary role is something you earned. Like you can't be a 3-year NFL vet and then be like, hey, I'm good on training camp now, but you have earned that to this point. And
right.
You showed that you could do it. You showed it with the Raiders last year when you stepped in. But how tough is it when you're with the Raiders last year and then you help them make the playoffs and then you don't get to play in the playoff game?
Dude, it sucked, but it was one of those things that I was grateful that I even got 5 weeks with them because when Bisaccia had called me, he FaceTimed me, and just a couple weeks prior, we had exchanged Happy Thanksgiving texts with each other, and I sent him some funny video where I'm, like, working out, and I'm letting him know, like, hey, whether you need a janitor, whether you need X, Y, and Z, like, I'm ready to go. Practice squad guy, I'm available, and just sent him, like, a funny video, and he laughed and joked on me about all the bus with the boys stuff, and I'm like, you're right, you probably can't afford me now to be, you know, a practice squad guy or janitor, and we were laughing, so he FaceTimed me, and I was like, oh, I was taking a morning too, and I answer, thinking he's going to, like, bust my balls about something, and he goes, what are you doing? And I was like, you know, it's morning time, morning ritual. And he goes, God, dude, I can't ever take you seriously. He goes, listen, can you cover a punt? And I was like, yeah, I can cover a punt. Do you need me to come cover a punt? Or is this a real thing? He's like, yeah, we're down. Somebody had gotten injured on the team and they were down a guy. He goes, I don't know how long I can have you here, but would you want to come out here? And my question back was like, listen, I'm in it for, if you can give me 3 games, which is a credited season. And now thinking back, I talked to somebody the other day saying like, oh, you only needed 1 game last year because of the COVID rules. But I was in the mindset of the CBA. I'm like, if I get 3 games, that's a credited year that goes to your pension and everything else. And I just told him because we were traveling the bus at that point. And I was around Thanksgiving time. I was at home and telling my parents and telling my family like, hey, I'm good with retiring. Like I'm done. Like I'm not doing football drills anymore. My conditioning is now the road bike. I'm doing the rower. I'm kind of saving my legs because I was doing linebacker drills like 2 to 3 times a week and speed workouts and everything else to stay ready. And my feet and my knees, you know how it is. You're not on anti-inflammatories. It right. Kind of just wears on you. And I'm thinking like, why am I still doing this? I'm having a great time traveling the bus around. It's getting late in the year. Like just be at peace with wanting to hang it up, not wanting to, but just be at peace that like, hey, you might not get a call. Which I was, and then he hits me up. And so I'm like, if you can give me 3 games, he's like, listen, I can't tell you that, but you know, I will do whatever I can to get you those three games because it was based on an injury and a linebacker coming back. He had, I want to say it was Kwiatkowski. He had like a high ankle sprain. And so I went there and ended up getting 5 weeks, and I wasn't even going to get the fourth week. That was also during the time my mother passed away. So they, that organization, I can't speak high enough of the way that they treated me when all that stuff went down. But even after the fourth week, I was back and I got cut. Oh, man, how did that go? I got cut one morning, woke up the next morning, Markel Lee got COVID. And literally before I left, there was a snowstorm in Nashville. So my flight didn't leave in the morning from Vegas the next day. So it got delayed and I was going to fly out in the afternoon, hopefully. But Sacha calls me the next morning after I did a goodbye. I'm smiling, I'm dapping up all the boys. Cause I really like, I knew my time there. I didn't know how long I'd be there. I just knew I was going to go in. I was going to enjoy the locker room as much as I could because I played with the Raiders before and I was going to try and win as much as I could for Bisaccia because everybody wanted him to keep that head coaching job. So it was like the best situation. I had the most fun there. And then, so I get cut. He calls me the next morning. Have you flown out yet? No, I haven't. He goes, we need you to sign back if you want to play this week. They kept me there until Wednesday. So I had already gotten paid for the week. So I would, you know, in the business world, I was basically playing for free because they kept me because they treated me so well there. I can't say enough good things, but he's like, do you want to play? I was like, hell yeah, I want to play. Like we're trying to get in the playoffs. And I go, cause somebody had gotten COVID, tested positive. I was like, man, if we win and I don't get to stay for the playoff game, I'm going to be tight. But I'm like smiling like I am now. And so we play that game and it was one of the most legendary games. Like if that's the last game I play, like what an iconic game to go out on. Cause it came down to the wire that the score was changing. Like there was like 13 clock stoppages. It was like the last minute in an NBA game, the way that the Chargers were driving and penalties were happening. Fourth downs were getting converted and all that stuff. But we ended up winning that game, dude. And that next week, I figured I was getting cut. So I already kind of knew because when Bisaccia called me to bring me back, he goes, listen, I can only promise you this week. Like, who knows what happens next week? If it's up to me, you're going to be here. And so the next week, I got cut and I got to say goodbye to the boys again, which is a fun time. But, dude, I was just hyped to be a part of it and be a part of like that, them coming back, making the playoffs, trying to win for Bisaccia, trying to win for each other. And it was fun to also play in that Vegas stadium. But yeah, that was a good goodbye that second time around.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's cool what you said. Like, if that's it, if that's the last one, what a game to go out on. For me, my last game was a lost playoff game, but that was the game that got the Bills and ended the longest playoff drought in all the pro sports. So I'm like, you know what? That was my last year. I can live with that. Hope they win the Super Bowl this year because I can live with all that because I helped them kind of get in my mind. I helped them kind of get down.
You did. You helped build that. You helped build the culture. They paid you to keep you there. Like you were a cornerstone in where they're at now.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Let's rewind a little bit back on your story. So you come in the league as an undrafted free agent. I don't think a lot of people on this podcast understand how tough that is going into, was it 80 man camp rosters when you came in?
90. It was 90, but the practice squad was only 8 players and not what it is now, which is like 16.
Yeah. So what's your mindset coming into training camp as an undrafted dude? Is it, man, I'm one of the best linebackers on this team. I know I'm making the team. Or is it, let's just see how this plays out. What's your mindset like in that situation?
Man, I've always been confident in my ability to play, but there's always like, you know, it's like a gift and a curse because I feel like I'm solid with my self-awareness. And it was one of those things when I started working with Ben Newman, you know, Ben really well.
Yep.
When I first started working with Ben, I loved the mental sports psychology of everything. I used a Mental Edge was the book I had read going into my senior year of college. And it was something I utilized during my pro day because I was injured. I had a hernia going into pro day that I had to battle through and I couldn't train the way I wanted to. And I was still hitting like these goals based on visualization and everything else. So I've always been big on that stuff. But when I had met with Ben, one of my first things I wrote, it wasn't like I'm going to make the team. It was, you know, I'm going to put everything I have into it, but if it doesn't work out, there's 31 other teams out there that are watching. And Ben's like, you got to change that right now. Like you've got to say, I am a linebacker with the Washington Redskins. I am a pivotal piece on their team. And that's when that mental work started to shift for me in the summer going into training camp. And I would work, I worked with him once a week on it. I worked with that Ben. He was my mental coach once a week. I would meet him halfway in between where I lived in Missouri and where he was in St. Louis. We'd meet at a Panera Bread company or St. Louis Bread Co. South Brandon in Missouri, but I would meet him there and we would go over mental stuff and I would work on it for the whole next week. And I would be in my book and everything else, because in my opinion, where I was going to get any kind of edge was playing from the neck up. It's kind of how I've earned my keep throughout my entire career, is my ability to play from the neck up. And so when I was coming out of mini camp, I would watch film. You got to take your iPad home for the summer and everything else. And my study habits were study one defense and two blitzes per day and just understand those in and out. So whenever I get to training camp, like, I'll be able to hit the ground running, understand the checks, understand the tough situations, understand when you're showing pressure, how a quarterback checks the other way or how they check into a play action pass, like understand all of those sayings. And that was something I did in mini camp, because I would get like maybe two reps a day, because I'm a four at this point. There's seven linebackers in a room. There's only three teams that play throughout practice, and there were sets of two guys. So two inside backers. Now I was the seventh guy on the depth chart. And so I would get to work in with the threes on like one set per day. Wow. Like whoever the threes were, we would just switch out. So I'd get like two reps. So I knew that I would have to make those two reps count. Now, how much they actually did, I have no clue, but I would watch. The way I would break down film in minicamp was I would watch the offensive film and game plan them just like I would a normal offense in college. And the stuff that Coach Pelini and his staff taught me when I was in college, I was very fortunate to learn under those guys and kind of learn defense and trying to be like a D coordinator on the field and tendencies and formations and based on personnel and all that stuff. And I would write out and game plan our offense, knowing that day two of minicamp, they were going to use the same install from minicamp going into training camp. And so they're not going to make the learning curve that difficult, because they're going to want you guys to run, whether it's a wide zone and the play action off the wide zone or a bootleg, or, you know, when you're in the I formation and the X is nasty into the boundary, like how that's a play action alert. Like, I'm doing all these tips and things on what couple running plays are out of each formation, what to look for when it's a pass alert, all that stuff. So that way I can be loud and demonstrative when I was on the field. So coaches would be like, hey, that number 46, he kind of knows what he's doing out there. Like, when he does get in, and there is a little going into now, fast forward, we get to training camp. I'm knowing all this stuff. The luck that played into my hand was Keenan Robinson. You never want anybody to get hurt in front of you, right? But when you're at a spot that I'm in, you need things to go your way to get onto the field. And Keenan Robinson was a fourth round pick. The dude looked like Tarzan. Like, he was 6'4", like 235, 240, like just looked the part. And he was playing next to, I want to say it was him and London Fletcher, him and Perry Riley. I don't know, but he tears his pec on day one of training camp, day one. So immediately I go from being the seventh linebacker out of being at the bottom of the entire room to being, now I'm on third team for sure. And the undrafted guy who was a rookie who was ahead of me, there's also an undrafted guy who's even ahead of me. He's now running with the twos. Week two, I'm doing the most, like taking advantage of any op that you get. Cause you know how it is. It's like, you got to be ready when that opportunity does come. So I like look back on thinking my study habits, being like, I'm hyped that this is kind of starting to go my way. I'm going to get some more reps in training camp against these guys. Then I'm working with the threes. So my 2 to 4 reps a day is now going up to probably around 8 to 10, depending on how much work you get throughout a training camp practice. Then the second week, the undrafted cat ahead of me, Jeremy Kimbrough, he was a stud. He tears his hamstring. So now I am thrusted in with the twos and I'm getting to play with the twos, which was a huge opportunity for me. And again, I'm watching film on any off time I get. I'm like doing all the same study habits that I've always been known to do, that I feel like this is my edge, this is my advantage. And dude, one day, like my first day of getting the run with the twos, I get two picks, one on RG, one on Kirk Cousins, and I almost get a third one. It ends up being a PBU, but I have a hell of a day to where Shanahan comes up to me. I get the run with the twos in her first preseason game at Tennessee, and Shanahan comes up to me, Mike Shanahan, the night before the game. He's like, you're the interception machine, aren't you? And I'm just like, you know, I'm smiling ear to ear, just like kind of like head down, like, oh, I appreciate that. And he's like, no, you're doing some good stuff. Keep it up out there. And you know how it is, bro. Like, you get a compliment like that, being a guy that's like on the bottom of the charts, because a special teams coach didn't mess with me. I didn't play special team in college because I was primarily a every down linebacker.
Right.
And he just didn't mess with me that much. Like, I wasn't the best at it. I took Adam Hayward coming in from Tampa Bay in year two and three, helped me really get acclimated. He was kind of my mentor on special teams because what I was known for was being a good depth linebacker at first before I got my starting opportunity. But I needed to get better at special teams. If you're going to be a good depth player, like, you've got to be a really good teams guy.
Have to.
I ended up leading the team in tackles that preseason, and I ended up getting cut and getting put on practice squad pretty much because of my ability on special teams wasn't up to par yet. Like, I could play, what helped me out is I could play both spots, linebacker. I could back up both guys, but I needed to get better at teams. So I basically sat on the shelf all year, my rookie year, as a P squad guy and learning and trying to weather that storm, because that's adversity in itself, kind of waiting the entire year playing fullback, linebacker, covering every down on special teams during special teams period as a practice squad guy. Like, that's just a grind, bro. But yeah, I had got on, that's how I got on the team that my rookie year. And yeah, it's wild looking back on.
Man, that's an incredible story. I love how you talked about breaking down the offense for the Redskins. I used to do the same exact thing because as center, I'm calling out all the line stuff. And so I would always watch film back of what they installed in OTAs. And then we'd get to training camp and I'm pointing them out and pointing them out. And Mike Pettine was the one I'd have the most fun with because I would figure out his terminology. I'd figure out everything. And then one day he comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, I got something for you today." And all of a sudden, in the middle of our blitz period or third down period, the whole defense is yelling, "Wood, wood, wood." And I was like, "All right, it's got to be, you know, it's going to be something. It's going to be a pick on me. I know it is good. You know, I know what's coming." And they double mug the linebackers and just blow through me, both of them. And they're like, and Penn's like, "Yeah, quit calling out my blitzes." And then
that's hilarious. And then
he called that. So we used to call it as an O-line, "Hey, diddle, diddle, three up the middle." It's like, you have to, like, the defensive ends are going to drop. The tackles have to come in or else you can't pick up all three up the middle. And then Pettine named that one Megan. So if you're ever listening to a game and the defense is yelling Megan, that's Pettine's middle daughter. So that's everybody coming up the middle and revealing some secrets on the pod today. But so I would study just the same way, because how are you going to catch that advantage? And the NFL is about doing everything you possibly can, especially when you're not just the most physically, like when you don't look like Mario Williams or Javon Kearse or somebody. It's like, Absolutely. What can you do to take an advantage? And I love that you did that as well, because I don't know many guys, like I haven't talked to many guys that would do those types of things, but that gives you an advantage. And you know what? The tape's out there. If you're going to put it in the same exact way, then do it. And then one other thing too, because I was talking to Sean McDermott about this recently. It's so interesting because you're talking about a guy getting hurt who was going to be a contributor, but that gives you an opportunity. And I was playing golf with Sean McDermott recently, and he was like, "Man, the tough thing in the spring is you're trying to continue to instill the culture. You're trying to raise the expectations to a Super Bowl, but half the roster, more two-thirds of the roster is worried about making the team. Like, what can I do to even be on this team? So I really don't care about your Super Bowl expectations. I really, like, yes, I care about your culture, and I'm all in, but like, coach, you're like, I got to worry about me. I got to worry about even getting on this team." So
yes,
it's interesting hearing you talk about that. And I just got to ask one question. When you make the practice squad, do you get to go to the Mike Shanahan party at the end of training camp?
Yes, man. The legendary Shanahan parties. And those are real. Ours was a Hawaiian themed one, bro. We went, and it's like, they had the casino set up inside, like the fake money chips on how you're going to pick your prizes at the end of it. Like, it's the best time going to a Shanahan post-camp party.
Dano's and Pabst Jerky is bringing you a spicy collaboration to deliver a Southwestern punch of flavor with Dano's Chipotle Jerky. This is an all-natural, no-sugar, high-protein, and low-fat snack perfect for an active lifestyle by giving you the fuel to get through your next big adventure. Available now at PabstJerky.com. That's awesome. That's awesome. I've heard those are legendary. I've heard about a bunch of the ones from Denver, and I guess he had like this 20,000 square foot house out in Denver, and he would just throw an awesome party for everyone who made the team. They weren't quite as cool in Buffalo. I would do the end of training camp or end of preseason party at my house, but it was like a grill out with beers and whatever in the backyard. Not quite the same, but we tried to replicate it in some sense.
Oh, they done it up, bro. I'm talking like casino, all like they bring in a casino and you're like, you're just having the most fun ever. Everybody's drinking, everybody's having a great time. Like, it's the best.
That's cool. All right. So transition a little bit. So you start this podcast, Bussin' with the Boys. It's blown up. What was your initial process in starting the podcast? What led you to even want to get into podcasting?
Yeah, man, that's an awesome question. So I started listening to podcasts. I started becoming like a podcaster probably around 2015, I think. And, you know, like the normal guys who get into podcasts, you're listening to Rogan. I personally listen to Bigger Pockets podcast with real estate. And then I would also listen a lot to like the comedy ones, The Fighter and the Kid, Chris D'Elia, and also Ben Greenfield Fitness, who does a lot of recovery stuff. It's all performance-based, and you're learning how to bio, you know, human biohacking. And that's where I learned a lot of different like red light, sauna, how cold tub, everything that you needed to know.
BPC, yeah, he's been a guest on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dude, he's a stud. He's a wizard, bro. He actually helped me through a couple injuries. He probably doesn't even remember, but back in like 15 and 16, I was going through some injuries with my upper hamstring that would like come around to my hip and my groin, and my head trainer on the Redskins would get on the phone with him and talk to him, and I would DM him and stuff that he probably doesn't even remember. But yeah, would love the podcasting world. And I ended up writing in my journal back in, I want to say 2017, that I wanted to be one of the first active players or coach to have a podcast with a million downloads. Was like a goal of like a 3-year goal of mine, because it was something that I would drive. I would listen to podcasts and I would just love it. Clips on YouTube, the motivational stuff that they take out of podcasts and putting them in the some inspirational stuff. Like, I've just always loved podcasting. It's what I would go to over music on a longer drive, and I would learn a lot of stuff. And, you know, I've always been like, you know, when you have those cafeteria, those calf tables or sauna sessions or ice tub sessions where you're sitting around with the boys and talking about stuff that goes deeper than just practice and X's and O's, or you laugh and have fun, or you talk about business ideas. And I just always thought that it would be cool if we could take these conversations and put them behind a microphone. And I thought people would think that that was really interesting, especially with like the banter and the personalities, because we're always under a helmet. And not that our narrative is always controlled. I mean, it is, but I don't say that in a way that's like detrimental to us, but we never get to really sound off on our own or tell our own stories, or we always have to sacrifice for the logo, for the betterment of the team. And it's such a selfless game and such a performance-based business. And so I thought it'd be awesome to have a podcast. And that's kind of where the idea started. And then I didn't do it when I was in Washington. I was always nervous about what my peers would think, or getting too, putting myself out there too much when I'm not a guy who's like a superstar who can have the luxury or the leverage of doing it and not really giving a shit. It's not like I had vested years in the league yet. I think I'd only had 4 years at the time. And then when I came on the Titans, I want to say it was maybe like year six, maybe. I went there on a 1 year for $2 million deal, a deal that kind of competed for like a starting job. I saw myself more as competing to be the base guy, maybe not nickel and dime, because of the way the depth chart and roster set up. Vrabel was his first year there, and they ended up drafting Rashawn Evans in the first round and in my spot. And you kind of are, they traded up in the first round and drafted him. So you already know what time it is. Like, he's going to play no matter how well you play. Like, he was hurt the entire training camp with a hamstring injury, and I was taking one reps and stuff like that. And he ends up getting thrusted into playing in the first game, no matter what, like, no matter how far behind the eight ball he was mentally with the playbook, like, that investment in the first round is going to play if they're in like a position that does that, unless you're like a quarterback who's going to buy time and wait, or somebody who's just not up to speed yet on the O-line. Right. But you already, the writing was on the wall. So I'm back into a situation again to where you need something to happen injury wise for me to play or get out there, based on the way that we wouldn't rotate, but based on the rotation of games and everything like that. So I was essentially a backup and a special teamer that entire year. And the year before I went there on Washington, I had blew my foot out and had a Liz Frank injury. Didn't require surgery, but I had a Liz Frank that I ended the season on IR. So I go into free agency and sign that 1 year for two on kind of like a prove it deal, and didn't really get that a second contract that a guy kind of looks for coming out, because I wasn't able to remain healthy coming out of Washington. And so since I knew I was coming, ending that year on IR, where I signed that 1 year prove it deal on the Titans. Again, I don't have a pedigree that's like a high potential guy. You kind of know what you're going to get based on what you see on film and if a coach knows me. And then playing the whole next year on the Titans as a special teams and depth player. I never really saw the field in real playing time. I knew I was going to go into that offseason as a the whole awareness thing, as a minimum, no signing bonus, maybe a signing bonus, but probably not guy. And it was November, December, my wife now, well, she wasn't at the time, but my wife now and my friends and everybody would always tell me to like do the podcast. And my boys in the locker room would even say, Comp, you should do it. Like you would have an awesome podcast, blah, blah, blah. And that kind of gave me the validation I needed, like confidence, because you always get nervous about like what guys see you doing off the field. Cause you got a thick skin in the locker room.
No doubt.
And so I started journaling how I wanted it to look based on all the inspiration I had from podcasts that I would follow with Ben Greenfield and Joe Rogan and the way these guys were fighting the kid, the way they were on social media, like how I wanted to see it because I've always enjoyed social media and I could kind of put some flavor on it and would write it all out. Cause I'm telling myself like this offseason, I'm going to go after the podcast thing. Talk Taylor into doing it with me. Waited for him to come back from training. And the question I basically asked myself, knowing that I would be like, listen, if I end up getting some opportunity to play on like an actual contract, I'll go do it. But me believing that I'm going to be a minimum guy and it's going to be a 1 year veteran thing, being that hamster wheel of that journeyman, I decided that I'm going to go after this podcast or I'm going to go after my transition over saying yes to teams for a tryout. Because again, I didn't want to be a 90 man roster guy grinding to make a 53 and have to reinvent myself after I worked so hard to get to become a captain, to become a starter on Washington, to have another opportunity in Tennessee and not necessarily getting everything going. You know, it kind of, you kind of face a different adversity on like, hey, do you want to continue to grind this way to continue to make a team? And my answer was no. And I wanted to lean into transitions because I was doing real estate at the time. Not something that's like I'm able to sail off into the sunset, but I'm trying to figure out passions that I want to buy into before to where I don't need football versus being a guy who has nothing on the side and you need football. So you have to say yes to everything. So throughout mini camp that next year, I'm working on the podcast, working on the, Taylor comes back. We find this bus. I didn't want to do it. Taylor loved it because Taylor's edgy like that. He's kind of like, if it doesn't work out, let's put 10 grand into it. If it doesn't work out, I'll sit in my backyard because that's where Taylor was at. Taylor had just signed the biggest deal for an offensive lineman in the NFL. So Taylor had that leverage that kind of like, you know, I can do this mentality. And I kind of had, hey, I might play myself out of the league by having this podcast or maybe not. We'll just see where it goes. But I'm going to focus on doing this because I think it's going to be awesome. We put podcast episodes in the library. We ran five that were already backed in the library. And we started not like got good traction, but we had like we had like 5,000 downloads. And it was all about like retaining those numbers versus people being like, all right, these NFL players are doing a podcast. Let's see how they sound. Because it's one thing to start off hot. It's another to like keep your audience and continue to build it.
Right.
And essentially, I would get offers to come try out during minicamp and OTAs, and I would just say no. I probably turned down like the Eagles, the Jaguars, several teams I would call and ask to come try out during OTAs for a couple days. And if you play well enough, we'll sign you to a deal. I just like, if you don't want to, don't. Like at this point, why play for free? They're getting you to play for free for a couple days. You're risking injury and you don't have nothing guaranteed for yourself. So I would say no. I probably turned the Saints down three times in training camp. There were teams like, I want to say, Avery Williams went down for the Jets. He tore his ACL. The Jets called. I said no. I said no to the Saints a couple times early in training camp because I had Brennan Schaub coming into town to do a podcast. Like there were some names that Kyle Vannoy, the Patriots, came in joint practice with the Titans. And I'm getting Kyle Vannoy and some of these guys on the bus while Taylor's at training camp. And I'm really liking it. Like the Vrabel one started to go viral. Jalen Ramsey started to go viral for us. And Barstool had reached out and DM'd us asking if we'd be open to a conversation. I remember getting my first sponsorship check for podcasting from a local Anheuser-Busch retailer. It was Ajax Turner. Bro, when I tell you I was just excited to see a check like that, even though it was small, it was like seeing my first game check in the NFL. And that right. was where it was like clicked for me that like, dude, I love doing this. And it kind of made me like, if I don't play again, I'm good. Am I good with that? Like there's a lot of anxiety because I'd always known football and I still wanted to play football. But the Saints had contacted me twice and I turned them down because they were group workouts and not an individual workout. Because it's like, hey, if you're going to bring me in, we want it to be a solo workout. and we want the intent to sign. And then they had a third linebacker, I think, go down in training and preseason. It was about to be the third preseason game. And they call, we say yes, but Barstool had just started DMing us and they were going to fly down that day to meet with me. And so my agents call me. This is the day that I end up flying out, or this is the day the Saints try to contact me to fly me out. And I got a meeting with Barstool that night. So I basically avoid my agent all day and pretend that I was working out and just wasn't around my phone. Got to him in the early evening and said, hey, get me on the first flight out tomorrow. I'll go work out for the Saints. They set it up. It was all good because I wanted to make this meeting to sit down with Barstool. Taylor had an off day and we met over at a True Foods and sat down and we just, we had dinner. We didn't talk numbers or anything like that, but we just had a conversation with Barstool and our interest of partnering up with them. And it was a really good meeting. We met with the CEO, Erica Nardini, and Paul, I don't even know how to say it, pronounce his last name, but Gaz. He's like Dave Portnoy's right-hand man. That was a really good dinner. And we basically said that we're going to roll out our library for the rest of the year because Taylor and I would grind and got all these interviews set up to last us throughout the season because I didn't know where I was going to be playing. And then we would follow up with them after the season. So the next morning I fly out to the Saints, do a workout, crushed it, get signed that day. And this was 40 hours before the third preseason game. Play in the third preseason game, they asked me, like, hey, do you feel like you're picking up a couple things? Like, would you want to go out there? And I was like, yeah, let's let it fly. Cause I'm thinking I got nothing to lose. I can absorb playbook quickly and I got nothing to lose. Like I have, he hasn't learned the ropes far enough. Like excuse, you know what I'm saying? So I can just go out there and like play my game. And I end up making a couple good plays, like a good open field tackle in a 2-minute drill, which is big for a guy like myself with an undrafted pedigree. It's like, oh, he can tackle in space. Get moved up to the one base to go into the fourth preseason game. They're like, hey, we're going to throw you with the ones. You'll do like the first quarter, maybe a little in the second. You'll knock some rust off and you'll get out. And end up getting an ankle sprain and get cut from the Saints injury settlement, which sucked, but it was nobody's fault. It was what it was, man.
Right.
It was a bummer though, because I love the Saints organization. I think they have a really good locker room and it was going to be fun playing with those guys because the way Sean Payton was, the way the team police themselves, like they have a really good locker room. And that was the year, like later that year is when I signed on with Oakland. So I was chilling for a little bit doing the pod. I would go to our tailgates down at the Titan Stadium. And then the Raiders called later that year. And that's kind of how that transition of starting the podcast and everything goes. I'm sorry if I didn't get too in the detail about the pod and kind of balancing football in the pod at the same time.
Yeah, because that's a delicate balance you touched on, because I was going to ask about it, but you touched on it. It's like when you're an active player and there's really no one else out there doing it, you have to be prepared to take a bunch of crap from your teammates, which is fine. You're used to that. But then your boss too. Like, yes. I know, and we've talked about this, like Vrabel is like, hey, just do not let it distract you, and especially Taylor, who's protecting your most valuable asset. Taylor Lewan, your co-host, is the left tackle who protects your prized possession, the quarterback in the pocket. Like, yes, you guys cannot let this affect what you got going on, but if you got guys that can handle business, we talked about this on your podcast. It's like, I would rather have two guys on my team running a podcast that they're passionate about, having some quality conversations, opposed to having dudes that are out in Nashville partying all night. Like, that's a very easy city to get caught up in. And so I'd rather have guys like that. I got
absolutely, but you know how it is, though, the perception of, you would assume that coaches think that anyway, but the hard part is with a podcast, the perception gets involved that the media can come and intercept it a little bit, especially after a loss or after something bad. Cause I don't think necessarily it's thinking that they're putting time to this. It's more so like, you know how it gets outside and then the perception can kind of shift and the messaging in certain press conferences or interviews, certain questions can be asked where it's like, why are we talking about this type of thing? And I feel like that's probably where it comes from, but you're right. Especially with Vrabel the first time, like now busting with the boys is cool. Like now it's like it bigger and people accept it. And they're like, oh, it's really cool that you've done this. But there is a very awkward stage that you have to kind of endure and go through, because at the beginning, it's like, oh, you guys are doing a cute podcast, or why are you putting time into that when the main thing is this? And why even put time into that? Because if anything, you're just going to hurt yourself by being that outspoken. So there's like a very pivotal time that you got to go through. That's very like, that gives you a lot of anxiety, that really questions and doubts everything that you're doing. But obviously now it's paid off and everybody sees it as this thing now. But man, you know, like, it's a weird slippery slope that you're either going to endure or, you know, be like, all right, this isn't worth it. Like, let me get back. All these people are right. Like, what am I doing?
Right. And that's why one in four startup businesses work. And that's why, you know, most podcasts, 98% of podcasts don't make it to 100 episodes. It's because most people in life, no matter what you're in, aren't willing to push through that really uncomfortable stage to see it through. And generally, everything in life works on a hockey stick curve where it's very slow growth, then it starts compounding, and then boom, here's this huge hit. But most people quit like just before it. And you just don't push through, but you push through. And the same way with me, it's like, there's been so many times with my podcast, like I'll be playing around a golf with someone and they're like, you have a podcast? Like, oh, how's that going for you? Like, what do you get from it? This, I'm like, well, tune in, check it out. I got 170 episodes you can go check out now. So, but yes, there's an awkward stage with anything in life. You push through and that's where you see some fruit on the back end of it. I got a couple more questions about the podcast. Who's been like the craziest guest, like blew your mind that you could get them on?
Oh man. That's a good question. I would say blow my mind that we got them on. It didn't blow my mind that we got them on, but it blows my mind at his willingness to come on. And it's Dale Earnhardt Jr. So Our bus is themed Dale Earnhardt Jr. And a little context. Dale is a big Washington fan. So when I was on the Titans, or when I was on the Washington Redskins football team Commanders, Dale followed me on Twitter. There was like a time where we made our run to make the playoffs. And D'Angelo Hall was going back and forth with Kevin Durant on Twitter. And me being my like goofy self, I like chime in with D Hall and Durant because Durant's a big Washington fan. And I'm like, hey, D'all, introduce me to KD, but be cool about it. Don't, like, play it up too much to where, obviously, KD sees it. And he's like, come on, man. I know who you are, blah, 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 this and that. And I'm, like, on cloud nine because this is my first year of, like, starting. I started, like, 10 games, like, rolling. So you like that year with Kirk Cousins. And it was just high vibes at the back half of that season. And I see that KD's following me. I'm like, oh, man, this is, like, you know how it is, like, when you're a younger guy in the league and all that stuff's happening for you and you're just, like, you just – you understand how cool it is because I was telling D Hall one time, he sent me a video of his kids dabbing because I did a dab after a sack. I was just telling D Hall the next day, like how cool it was to actually get that video because I remembered being in my living room in middle school, watching D Hall compete for the Pro Bowl 40 yard dash when he was on the Falcons and rooting for him. And now I'm on his team and he's sending me a video of his kids doing a dab. And so I'm like living in those perspective moments, like throughout this back half of the year. And then I see an article written about the conversation between KD, myself, and D Hall. And then you see they did like a piece where Dale Earnhardt chimed in on following me and talking about how I'm a good follow and stuff. And I was like, bro, Dale Earnhardt Jr. And then I end up following Dale. And the next year he sends me a photo saying, wishing me luck at OTAs. Sends me a selfie of himself doing this and hey, good luck. He DM'd me and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like there's so many guys around me that are obsessed with NASCAR, obsessed with Dale. And I'm like sending it to those guys. And then we go to training camp. Like we start talking back and forth and messaging. And in training camp, he invited me to do his like, where he drives around the track. And it was like his last year of him being a race car driver and stuff. Like during training camp, it was like myself, Kirk Cousins, Josh Norman, and like Morgan Moses, Ryan Kerrigan, I don't know. But we all get to go with him at the track and drive around with him. And he's like excited. We're both obviously excited. I'm really excited to meet him. But his fandom of being a Washington fan, talking to him, like it's one of those things, like I was talking about Josh Allen earlier, like this dude does he not know that he's Dale Earnhardt Jr.? Right. And he's like hype about hanging out with me just because he's a fan of Washington and he just thinks I'm funny on social media. And but getting him to come on a Dale Earnhardt Jr. themed bus, drinking Bud Light with him and him telling stories like being Dale Earnhardt's son and just his journey in NASCAR and knowing that Dale Earnhardt Jr. sitting on the bus is like kind of like, I think that shit is nuts, bro. So I would say Dale Jr. has been the craziest guest that we've had on, even though like we've been quote unquote boys since I was on Washington.
Right. Who's a, and you don't have to rack your brain too hard, but who's a dream guest for you to get on the bus that's not lined up or anything?
Joe Rogan. I know that that could be, people take that a certain way, depending on like what social media site you're on. But Joe has been somebody that like you follow and listen to in his 3-hour long pods where he just has such interesting conversations. And I've learned so much from people who break down his interviews on how he interviews and his curiosity and his awareness. And obviously he's got some like inspirational, motivational stuff out there. The whole listen to this every day montage where he's mostly in my ears when I'm training and working out, where he talks about discipline and everything else. And he's had those conversations with like the David Goggins of the world, those guys who are successful and why they are successful. And so I would say Joe, just because he's like the biggest name in this industry and somebody who obviously I was the, when I'm listening to podcasts, he was like the first one. And you're just like, oh, this is the Fear Factor guy. And he's got this kind of popular podcast. And he talks about how he would do his webcam podcasting like way back in the day. And kind of like a pioneer in the podcasting space and somebody who just doesn't go on anybody else's show. I just think it would be insane. What I want to do is I want to take the bus to Texas and I want to park it outside his compound and harass him until he comes on the bus. And I say harass him, but we've had guys that come on the bus, comedians that are in his circle that I feel like we were one person away from him. But he's obviously so huge that it's not like you can just ask him that favor. It's like if Fitzpatrick was coming into town, I'm like, hey, you think Fitz would come on? You'd probably ask him. But if it's like somebody who's so pivotal, like just in the game of podcasting and just people like celebrity status, like that dude, you can only imagine gets asked to do so much. And his time is probably so pieced together and structured, but it would be, I think it'd be Rogan for me or Adam Sandler. I think Adam Sandler would be insane. Adam Sandler, somebody I always wrote on my worksheets when I was growing up, who's somebody you could have lunch with. And I would always write Adam Sandler just because I thought he was hilarious in all of his movies.
Oh, he's hysterical. And on the Joe Rogan piece, someone in his circle, after all the social media content went out of me being on the podcast, someone in a circle followed me who I've been a huge fan of, who I think tells the best story of all time, The Machine, and that's Bert Kreischer. And so I haven't like hit him up yet on Instagram, because like at some point I'm going to DM him like, hey, been a fan of yours for a long time. He was just in Louisville like not too long ago, but we were out of town, this and that. Anyways, I got a follow for Bert Kreischer from the boys.
We'll make that happen easy. Bert is an awesome dude. That's another one. That's another shocker. Like I said, Dale Jr., but when Bert was coming to town and he said, oh, I want to go on your, because he's mentioned our stuff on his pod before. And our minds are like blown that he had mentioned it. Like him and Tom know about the pod. He talks about like how cool it is and stuff. And we're like, holy shit. And I saw he followed me on Instagram and everything else. But Bert was another shock factor of him sitting on there, because he talked for 4 hours and it was like, we just, there was no break or no lapse. Like we had to eventually say, hey, we've done a Joe Rogan form podcast to where it's been like 4 hours and we had to break it up into two parts, but we can make that happen, dude. Like Bird is like, he's a stud and he's like, he would just do it. I know he would. Like he's a super good dude.
Yeah. And to me, like similar to how your podcast is too, like I like picking anybody's brain. And that's what I like about Joe Rogan too. Like, he'll have a health expert on, he'll have a fitness expert on, he'll have a former military, and he just picks their brains and asks the best questions. And I know what you were talking about politically, like now, like one day he's ultra conservative in everyone's opinion, the next day he's ultra liberal. It's like, man, I feel like Joe is just simply asking questions. Like, yes, some of his guests are that way, but if you're listening to him speak, it's not him hammering his own opinions out there, and that's what makes him so special.
Yes, bro. Anybody who actually listens, like anytime he's going viral and, you know, trying to get canceled and all that stuff, like to me, it just shows that you're not listening to his pods, like more than one episode, even just because he does. Like, there's a lot that I learned in the interviewing game, just because, again, people, he's so big that people break down his videos and his interviewing style and how he gets better at stuff, or listen to how Joe handles it here back when, you know, he wasn't as patient versus now when he asks a question, you can tell he wants to say more, but he like reverts back. So there's a lot of like tidbits I take away from his style because he is so good at being curious, asking good questions. And he also is somebody who knows enough information, like, you know, what is it called? Like master of none, like knows a little bit about everything, master of none type of thing. But he knows enough to like hold his own in conversations, or to at least ask something to where he can acquire more information out of it. So he's always been somebody I kind of like look to as like the standard of getting people to feel comfortable when they're on your show asking good questions and getting them talking about themselves. Like I take a lot of stuff from his information.
Yeah. I'm the same exact way. I like listening to him. I like listening to you all. I love just watching, almost like watching film back in the day for football. It's like, okay, who's yes. the best in our industry at this? How can they do it? That helps me through my broadcasting for football, helps me in everything else too. But just watching people's communication styles is so valuable. And going back to Bert Kreischer, comedians, like I look at comedians in a totally different light now because I've started to get into broadcasting, podcasting. I look at comedians and I watch them on stage and you watch like their pace, their timing, like how they set up the jokes, their communication styles. Like to me, comedians are just absolutely phenomenal. Like church services are different to me now. Like watching church services, you watch this really gifted pastor and you're like, man, that guy, he does this extremely well. It's really hard. And I've talked to buddies of mine. One of my really close friends is a head pastor at our church here in Louisville, fourth biggest church in the country. So it projects out to so many people. And I was like, man, it's tough for me to watch people communicate now. He goes, oh, you're done. Like as soon as you get into broadcast, as soon as you get into some type of speaking, everywhere you go, everyone you listen to, you're like, ooh, that's really good. Or maybe I should pick up on that.
Dude, I agree 1000%. Like, and you, because you're in the real estate game as well. Like you're in the business stuff, like just negotiating skills, communication skills, influencing skills, like just all of it. Like it's all super interesting to me. And you're right. Like you go and like listen to these people and you're like watching their technique and style because that's what's making them great. It's not necessarily like, yes, they have the gift, but also like those are skills that are acquired over a long period of time because it takes a lot of like, you know, patience and social awareness and self-awareness and all this stuff to kind of like wait and see stuff out. Or do you know how it is? You can get in your own head at times, like as you're going. And I'm like you, bro. It's like watching film, like when I'm like listening to people speak now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right. I'm going to be sensitive of your time. I appreciate you coming on, doing this while you're traveling and visiting the in-laws. We got a few recurring questions. I'll get you out of here.
All right.
What was your first car?
Like in high school, like from my parents, I was giving
yeah,
me
like or that the I bought. First one you ever had?
It was a Blazer, a 1993 Blazer, rusted. It was like it looked like a dumpster, dude. But like anybody in high school, I had a couple subwoofers. I got a couple subwoofers put in it, but just what a piece. But it was a 93 Blazer.
That's awesome. What's your favorite book?
Man. Man, I would say like right now I'm into communication and learning about like skills and everything else that I can get solid at. And I'm really into listening to the audiobooks, to any YouTube on them. And I've read his book, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating Like Your Life Dependent on It, by Chris Voss. Like I've listened to his master class. Like I like listening to a lot of the stuff he says, and I'm on like one of those kicks of like acquiring skills and getting better at certain things. So I'm going to say that one right now with recency bias, but there's several out there, man. Like I'm big into personal development. So if there's like a good personal development book, that's kind of usually the flair I go with just because I enjoy learning about all that stuff, like Atomic Habits, The Compound Effect. Like there's a lot of good stuff out there that I feel like I'm always able to like take away from. So personal development is definitely like the area I go towards.
Yeah. That's generally my morning reading topic as well. What role's your faith play in your life?
Pivotal, man. I know when I was on Washington, what always helped me was you, because I'm always a big questions guy. I'm always super curious. I'm always like questioning and playing the other side of things, because it's like one of those things where it's like a gift and a curse, right? Like you want to figure out like how does it work this way or X, Y, and Z. And I always felt like I've gotten the most out of my journey when it comes to like group atmospheres, and we're all talking like group sessions, the Bible studies that we would have at during the Washington times. Those were always the times that influenced me the most, because the sitting down, the reading, yes, I like doing it, but there was always like, you always wanted to have conversations because there's always so many different opinions on different things. And you want to like, I've always, you know, the law of attraction and everything else, like how there's stuff that you're able to take out of the Bible that's from that, that directly correlates to that stuff. But I would say that those things, law of attraction, the stoicism in the Bible has always played the biggest influence when it comes to my walk.
Good stuff. What's your favorite restaurant in Nashville?
Cane Prime. Cane Prime, it's a steakhouse. As far as best steak in Nashville, I think that's still up for debate, but the entire menu, top to bottom, appetizers, dessert, sides, Cane Prime Steakhouse in Nashville is my favorite.
When I did the big weight loss, 4 months, 53 pounds, like right when my career ended, one meal that I did cheat on was down in Nashville at Cane Prime. And when you deprive yourself of any taste or fat or anything, and you go and have cotton candy bacon and
lobster
popcorn, it's literally going to change your life. And we went back and it was good the second time, like really good, still awesome. But they also, like that night I ordered a filet and they're like, hey, we're out of the filet, but we do have the Wagyu filet in and we'll give it to you for the same price. Well, like every time I've done that, like on an O-line dinner or something, I've always been like, dude, just give me the regular filet next time because this isn't worth like the $40 an ounce or whatever.
I'm with you.
But this one was incredible. Like Cane Prime, like it changed my taste buds in that moment. Bro.
And I'm glad you've experienced it because you spoke on a couple right there. The cotton candy bacon, the lobster popcorn, like, oh, it's such a good time there.
It is. All right, last one for me. This is what's next with Eric Wood. What's next for Will Compton? What's coming down the line for you?
So I think we're going to I'm going to lean a lot more into the transition side of Bussing with the Boys. Obviously, year 10 is up in the air. But one thing I do want to lean into is doing like a football preview show, where we talk sports betting, bet the bus. Instead of playoff Willie, it's payoff Willie. But we're working on some stuff now where I'm going to lean into that side of it. And we'll see what happens this year. Our agreement with Barstool is coming up. So it's going to be like an exciting time, whether we get in the free agency world, stick with Barstool long-term. I just think I'm really excited about like what's next with my life after football when it comes to my pivot, my career stuff and stuff with like my personality and Bussing with the Boys.
Well, you should be excited. You got a young family, a beautiful family. I follow you on social media, little baby girl born in April and everything you got going on in your life. I'm a huge fan of yours. I'm glad that we're boys now. We're going to have to do it again. And brother, I can't appreciate your time enough. And I'm glad we finally got this recorded and the podcast gods allowed this one to happen.
Dude, I know. I'm really glad I got to speak on all that stuff because I don't know if I've done like a longer form where I'm just talking about all of my stuff and how all of this stuff comes to fruition. But, dude, I appreciate it, man. And, again, we got to link up at some point this season, whether it's in Nashville or at a game somewhere. But we gotta keep this friendship rolling.
Yes, sir. We'll get it done. If you follow me at all on social media, you have seen me rave about my sauna from SaunaSpace, and I only promote products that I personally use myself. I'm excited to let you know that I now have an offer for the listeners. SaunaSpace allows you to rejuvenate at a cellular level with a sauna that harnesses the power of the sun. SaunaSpace combines cutting-edge infrared technology with nature's ancient wisdom to help you find relief. What's that mean? You will get the many benefits of infrared light. You will detox your body through the pouring of sweat out of your body, and you will be charged by the grounding mat your feet will be on. If you want that explained further, go to episode 94 of this podcast, and the owner, Brian Richards, will explain them for himself. Everyone that has purchased one of these saunas has absolutely loved it. It is a vital part of my daily routine to optimize my body. This would make a perfect gift this holiday season. Use the link in the show notes and use code WHATSNEXT5 for 5% off your order, and your loved one will never feel better.